Hello and welcome to Banking Transformed, the top podcast in retail banking. I'm your host, Jim Roos, owner and CEO of the Digital Banking Report and co-publisher of the Financial Brand. I'm excited to have Kim Snyder, CEO and founder of Clarivis, on the Banking Transformed podcast. Kim brings over a decade of financial leadership experience to Clarivis with a goal to create a leading edge, easy to use, transformational data analytics solution to enable community financial institutions to compete with the large mega banks. We discuss how Clarivis compiles data across disparate banking systems into unified dashboards, giving financial institutions and people within those organizations actionable insights to drive smarter decisions, making greater efficiency and accelerated growth. You know, I've been in banking for more than four decades, which is an extraordinarily long time, and there are few issues that are part of the life of a banker today as they were 40 years ago. The biggest one is that banks and credit unions have vast amounts of data spread across various silos, core systems, lending platforms, customer databases, and more. The challenge is that data often lives in these disconnected silos, making it almost impossible to analyze relationships, spot crucial trends, and look for challenges and opportunities in the marketplace. The result is that major growth opportunities are often missed due to the lack of visibility, not the lack of data. So, Kim, for those who are not familiar with Clarivis, can you share a little bit about your company, your background, your mission, and the challenges that you're trying to address for community financial institutions?
Absolutely, Jim. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast today. I'm super excited to finally get to meet you in person. I've been following you for quite some time and absolutely love what you're doing for the industry. So I'm Kim. I'm the CEO and founder of Clarivis. I actually started my career as a CPA with KPMG. And I spent a few years along the way in a startup company where I would say I caught my entrepreneurial bug, if you will. After that stint, though, I went to a community bank here locally in Roanoke, Virginia, where I'm headquartered. And I was there for 10 years as the chief financial officer. And Jim, I drank the Kool-Aid every day. Like, I loved what we were doing. I loved the impact we were truly having on our community. I love the environment that we had as a company, the culture that we had created. And after TARP, we paid that off, or after the Great Recession, I'm sorry, we paid TARP off organically. And all of a sudden, everybody started knocking on our door. We were a publicly traded institution. And at some point, you just kind of have to listen to those knocks. And we made a decision back in June of 2015 to exit the company. To sell the company. And I like to say that that gave me the ability to figure out what my next chapter was going to be. I was not retained with the acquisition. The bank that bought us was a much larger organization. And so I started a consulting practice focused on the financial institution space. That entrepreneurial bug I had caught a couple of years earlier, or 10 years earlier in my career, really kind of manifested itself. And I decided I wanted to try to see if I could make a difference for multiple institutions, not just for one. I was very blessed. I picked up some long-term clients that afforded me the capability to start hiring back a banking team to work with me. So I hand-selected 10 bankers to come join me on that journey. And Jim, I'll tell you, my biggest accomplishment to date is that I convinced 10 people to leave full-time jobs with all of the perks that those have to come join me on the consulting venture, and we wouldn't be where we are today without that. So we did that for about 4.5 years, where we worked with banks doing a variety of different projects. And every bank we went into, it did not matter the size, it did not matter their systems, it did not matter how sophisticated their IT team was or was not, everybody was struggling with data. We were finding that we were spending so much time helping the banks extract data and make sense out of it, that the light bulb went off one day and we just said, you know what, there's got to be a better way. This is not a small bank problem. This is an every bank problem. And that's really kind of what we set out to solve with Clarivis. And so what we do is we automate that entire report writing process, if you will, to start with, by bringing in data from the core system as well as the bank's ancillary systems. As you know, with this fintech evolution that we've seen over the past 10 years, a lot of banks are going best in class now. So they use their core for processing transactions, but they're going to Best in Breed, like with an Alchemy for their digital banking, you know, something else on their mortgage side. Their wealth is a whole different line of business, right? We think that if we can bring all those data sources together in one environment in an automated fashion and make it visible back to the bank in an enterprise solution, that's a game changer for the industry. And that's essentially what we're doing.
So you're really using the bank's data and outside capabilities to make this so it's more visible and more actionable, correct, Ben?
Yes, that's exactly right. So, you know, a lot of banks, especially the larger banks we talk to, they have spent the last 3 or 4 years, maybe 5 years, and a couple of million dollars just trying to consolidate all of their data sources into one location, create their own internal data lake, if you will. And they haven't even really thought about, well, how are we going to disseminate the information back to the end user to where they could actually do something with that data, right? So we, as a team of bankers, we actually started from that end user experience where we thought about how does the lender need to see their data in order to make decisions off of it? How does the chief executive officer need to see their data? What is going to make that easy? So we started from that perspective. And that's how we've built our entire platform. And so it's a dashboard, but it's very interactive. It's very intuitive. One dashboard, 4 different people can come in and get the answer to why. And it may be a different question that they're each asking themselves, rather than having a bunch of manual report writers sitting in their bank trying to, you know, deal with the proverbial queue that exists in banking. I need a report. Okay, well, let me see where I can fit you in on my schedule. Because that's what's happening if you don't have a platform like this.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I remember, it's amazing how much my memory works when I look back in my banking days and realize when you bring up something like this, geez, it rang a bell that when I was in marketing, when I was working for marketing firms as well as when I was working in the banking industry itself, the biggest challenge was finding out who had the data that I could use. You know, you'd have to go to the IT department, or you want to find out the results of a marketing program, you have to wait for it, maybe 6 months after the program, which is too late. And the biggest problem was there wasn't a democratization of data, if you were, to be able to make it so the people that really had to make decisions based on it had direct access to it, as opposed to having to knock on doors and stand in lines, the data queue, as it were. You know, as an industry veteran, what are the biggest changes that you've observed in the data infrastructure and analytics over the past decade? How far do community banks tend to, how far behind do community banks tend to be right now when it comes to leveraging data?
I think they're very far behind. I mean, it's really unfortunate. And it's I like to say it's not their fault.
Yeah.
Because I don't believe it is their fault, Jim, right? So the cores are really great at processing transactions. That's what they do best. They were built on, let's face it, before what, the Palm Pilot? I mean, I think I had a Palm Pilot back, like, I don't know, back in the early 2000s, right? And this technology was built way before then. And so it's really hard to take a system on antiquated technology and use modern tools against it, right? To be able to leverage it. The same thing with the disparate data problem. Even if a bank has all in with one of the big cores, those systems are not talking to each other.
Right.
And this is a soapbox that I will get on and stay on for my whole career. If you're listeners, if you're negotiating any kind of technology contract, you need to get an automated data extract with all the data elements coming to you on a nightly basis in a CSV file. And it should be included in your contract. Data accessibility is a problem. These vendors, I literally was on a call with a vendor the other day and they said, well, it's not the bank's data, it's my data. I'm like, that's not true. It is the bank's data.
That's not good.
And you need to be giving it. No, it's not. And they need to be giving it back to the bank in a way that they can leverage it. The problem is that 5 years ago, there was no way that the bank could even leverage it. Let's say they got all of those automated CSV files from all the systems that they were using. There were really no tools unless they stood up a strong data team that knew SQL and could do database and scripting and all of that to bring it together to make sense out of it. Well, now you can leverage it with Clarivus. And so that's really, you know, what we're doing. So I think the industry is behind in the ability to actually use the data that they have. But I don't think it's necessarily the bank's fault. I think it's just this ecosystem that we live in, and the fact that a lot of vendors hold data hostage from the bank, and it's just not right.
So the beginning of your company really came at an instrumental time in the business where smaller organizations realized you can buy these composable solutions in a way that really allows them to do big things in a rapid speed and scale up. So you've really built the bridge between core providers, data providers in different platforms that have these silos that have been built, and bring them together and show community banks how to leverage that data in a way that can be deployed, correct? And you probably also help on the deployment, because as you're working with organizations, you realize the challenges they have, let's say, in the deposit or lending area, and you can figure out how to access that, can't you?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we're bringing in key data points from all the various systems into one environment. We're doing the transformation. We're mapping it to a common data model, right? And then when we're deploying it back to the banks, we're actually leveraging embedded Microsoft Power BI as the visual layer that we use for our tool. So everybody can come in every single day and get the insights that they're looking for. What is the answer to the question? And the beauty, Jim, is that now that everybody is seeing data the same way, there's trust in what they're seeing. Trust is a big factor in the community banking industry. With the way data is delivered today through reports, it just depends on who wrote the report as to what the numbers might, you know, be on the page. And it's not uncommon for two people to show up to a meeting and have what should be the same numbers that don't tie.
So it's interesting. So you can use any core system. I'm going to start their rear basis. So there's only so many, but the reality is organizations say, you know, okay, so I get my data from here. I don't know what it's really like. You're familiar with each one of the core providers, so you know the things you have to look out for. So you really work as part of the IT team or the data team at the community organizations you work with, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we have done, I think, 20 different core systems so far, as far as integration. So we've hit the bulk of them for sure. We're now working our way through a bunch of the different ancillary system integrations. But we know the data points we want because it's a team of bankers that are actually doing the implementations. We are not a company. As a banker, I used to get so frustrated. I would buy a technology solution and I felt like I spent the entire implementation time period trying to teach the technology company how to use their technology in banking. That's not who Clarivis is, right? And we don't hand you a template and say, go fill this out and get back to us when you're ready. Like, we roll our sleeves up. We are hands-on in the implementation process. And that's really a differentiator for us because we're bankers. So we do understand the systems. We understand the lingo. We understand the business value of the data. That's a big miss that banks that are trying to do this on their own. They go out and they hire some data scientists, right, to kind of come on board and build out visualizations, if you will, from their data, but they don't understand the business value. And so there's still this constant back and forth between the business team and the data team to try to get it right. Well, because we're a team of bankers, we bridge that gap. Back to your original analogy, right? Yeah. So we are bridging that gap, and we are making the data available on a nightly basis. It's updated every single day, so the banks can come in and see what they need to see. It doesn't matter where you live in the organization.
You know, I'm going to take a case study here. You know, there's a lot of emphasis right now, especially with community financial institutions, on generating deposits. How has your company built new solutions to help community banks understand the deposit leakage they have and how to not just as importantly as generating them, but keeping the ones they have?
Yeah. So timeliness is critical, right? So timeliness of information is absolutely the key to the puzzle, in my opinion. So with Clarivis, our bankers are able to come in every day and they're able to see the major changes or minor changes at the all the way down to the customer level. So you can drill all the way into and see what is happening at that customer level inside of Clarivis. And so here's a great case study. Back in March when SVB, you know, failed and the issues with First Republic were happening and so forth, right? I actually had a couple of bank CEOs call me and say, basically, look, thank you. I was able to come in. I was able to see a large movement of dollars from a long-term customer out of my bank the morning at 8 o'clock in the morning. I was able to see that. Their relationship officer was looking at the same thing. We had a conversation. I, the CEO, because we're dealing with community banks and that's what community banks do, right? I, the CEO, picked up the phone. I called that customer. I went to them. I showed them how solid our bank was and explained to them the difference between our community bank versus an SVB, and they moved all the money back the next day. And what he told me is, had I not had Clarivis, it would have taken me a week to figure out that customer. And by that time, they might have already had their debit card, you know, in the mail to them. They might have already like started that whole transition process, and it would have been so much more difficult for him to get that money back into the bank. And so that's just one example. We have lots of those examples from using data and using our system. The other thing that we did during that time period, Jim, is we had what I call our deposit balance change dashboard that's in our platform today, and we enhanced that tremendously. In about a 3-week time period, we turned it around and we gave much more flexibility into that, so they could drill down all the way to, as I said, see every customer with their deposit changes across the entire organization. So they can see which products are moving the needle, because they can slice and dice. And so which products are generating the most deposit, yep, where are we having the most success? They can drive their marketing dollars into those products, perhaps talk about a strategy to move some deposits out of products that are not performing into better performing products, right? All because they can see the data, they can see what's happening, they can see what is being successful, and they can see that every single day. And everybody, that transparency across the entire organization is a game changer. Everybody can see it. You don't have to come in and educate the team, because the team sees it every day.
You know, that's so key, because we had a guest on, boy, it must be a year and a half ago now. They said, we started to analyze the flow of funds when the government gave COVID checks out, and said, you know, a lot of organizations are getting really high and mighty, saying, you know, look at all the deposits we're getting, look how big the savings accounts are getting. But they didn't realize how much was being transferred out at the same time, because they're looking at the masses rather than the individuals. And they realized that some of their best customers were building very strong relationships with fintech organizations that are offering higher rates. And with them being able to analyze that and actually see that movement, their organization was actually able to combat that, as you brought up, not only with special products and special offers, but to understand that there's a lot of silent attrition going on. You know, many people listen to podcasts. I bring this up quite a bit, that I'll go to a room of 200 bankers. So they already have a pretty loyal base there that they all probably bank with their current organization they work for. And I say, how many of you in the last 5 years has closed a primary financial relationship? And virtually nobody raised their hand. I said, okay, now how many of you in the last 2 years have opened a brand new relationship with a fintech firm, with some organization in the primary product lines in the last 2 years? And virtually everybody raises their hand. And then they look around and say, guys, look around. You know, this has happened to you daily. You think you have this core customer, but every day they're building new relationships. And if you're not measuring that, if you're not measuring flow, if you're not measuring what's going on behind the scenes, you're losing customers. You're losing relationships. So what impact does the improved access to data you brought up, that everybody in the organization has access to the tool, how important is that on the employees, on the culture, on even hiring practices, when you're really giving the keys to the kingdom to as many people as you can?
Oh, it's huge, Jim. And it's honestly, it's not something I thought about when I embarked upon this journey, right? I was trying to solve this data problem when we started with Clarivis. And what we're hearing back, and what I can see so clearly now with our clients, is that Clarivis has become a game changer as far as the employee experience. Think about Google, right? If I have a question, a personal question, I can Google and I can get the answer, right? Bankers can't do that. They should be able to do that, but they can't do that about their customers, right? So that self-service access is just absolutely critical. We're empowering the employees to do their jobs more effectively. We're now the foundation for internal communication, because as I mentioned, everybody is now seeing data the same way. So now the question becomes about why is this happening, not what is happening. They're not spending all their time trying to figure out, well, was that a movement outside of the bank, or was that just a movement within accounts? Because we're delivering that to them to where they can see it very easily. They're able to see what's working, what's not working. The coaching, right? So you can see now this is a scary thing for some of our banks, right? That transparency can be scary, right? Because if I'm two lenders and maybe I'm not at the top of that lender leaderboard, now everybody in the organization maybe can see that. you know, I think that's a good thing because that's just kind of the way I'm built, but not everybody embraces that necessarily. But that transparency in the organization, improving that employee experience, who wants to come to work and write the same report over and over and over and over and over and over and over again and never know?
Yeah.
Here's the key. Is anybody really using that report? Somebody asked me to write this report 5 years ago. And so I'm updating it every day and I'm maintaining it, but, and I'm sending it into the, you know, universe at the bank. I have no idea if anybody's using that report or not, right? Who wants to do that? That's not any fun. Let's empower these data analysts to actually help analyze the business, use the data to drive the business rather than spend all their time trying to create the data to put it in a format that somebody can leverage.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about the accessibility and the access to it. But underneath that, you also said, well, you know how people use it, the fear of somebody seeing data they haven't seen before, the opportunities there. You know, this is one of the keys, I think, with your company is that because you're all bankers, because the majority of your organization is made up of bankers, these are frustrations and opportunities that your team can relate to. So I would imagine that on an ongoing basis, you kind of become that psychologist that talks about, yes, we know this goes on, but we can help you with the culture situation. Because I think that's giving people throughout the company access to data can be a scary thing for some leaders. I would imagine that because you come from the banking industry yourself, you can show, yeah, it can be scary, but here's how you can alleviate that fear. Is that true?
Absolutely. It 100% is true. And now, you know, Jim, that we have the client profile that we have so many use cases and our customers, it's really been fun to watch, right? So when you're a young company, you leverage the current customers that you have for references and those kinds of things, right? As people are vetting your solution, and that continues on. Well, what has happened with the Clarivis community of clients is they form their own little community now. And so they are actually having conversations, and we want to make this more formalized and actually create, you know, a community for our banks. But they pick up the phone and they call, you know, hey, I talked to you about Clarivis, you know, glad you're on board. We're trying to solve for this problem. Can you help me? And so it's really kind of creating that outside of the Clarivis ecosystem, if you will, that community that's going on. But the consulting that we do along the way. So one of the obstacles that we have, and this won't surprise you, when we're talking to a new prospect is they're worried their data is dirty. And I like to say, look, every bank's data is dirty. It's the dirty little secret in banking, right? Because we have not done a great job with data governance and maintaining, you know, I like to give the example. Yep. Every time you go to the doctor's office, what do? They confirm your name, your address, your cell phone, your insurance, right? Well, banks don't do that. They should, but they don't. And so you have a lot of messiness inside of the data and it concerns people. What Clarivis does though, is affords the bank because now they're seeing data visually. They can figure out what elements do I need to clean up, and then we can have a conversation about how some of our other clients are leveraging, you know, that particular code or what have you, in their core system, to be able to make sense out of it or to do something with the element itself and make it more meaningful. So it is a very consultative approach, and you're right because we're a team of bankers, we lean into that heavily. It's who we are at our core.
Well, and it's key because you're not just giving organizations a platform. You're not just giving them a technology. You're actually helping them through the way you've built this platform on how to use it. You know, that is the key. I mean, we have, I kid about the fact that, you know, almost every organization of any size has Salesforce implemented. But if I went and said, what are you doing with the information you get from Salesforce? They're stymied because the reality is they pay for the subscription every year. It's not Salesforce's fault, but there could be more done on their part to become better consultants as to how to use this data to become successful, because how many of us have platforms on the shelves that we've never used, but we can justify the investment. I mean, I do it in my own business. I justify an investment in something going, at some point I'm going to do this, but that's where you can really serve the consultant way of implementing this, and where your bankers helping bankers, it becomes even more key because you're not just technologists, which is a big deal. Could you discuss a little bit about the whole hype around AI and what role you may envision as to AI improving the development of and the access to data?
Absolutely. So, you know, I laugh. We just closed a capital round in December that I'm very proud of. But I do believe had I added AI into my name in some form or fashion, I probably
would have gotten more money
at a much higher valuation, right? Because of all the buzz that is around AI. But, you know, look, you don't have to boil the ocean, right, in order to make sense out of your data. And so, you know, at the very foundational layer, you cannot leverage artificial intelligence unless you have clean, normalized data, right? Because data junk in to those models is junk out of those models. And so what we've been doing over the course of the past 5 years since we started our company is really getting that foundational layer of all the banks. And we're solving a major reporting problem in the process of doing it for them. And so that is happening. So now we have all of this data. And so, you know, we have a number of different use cases, and that's how we develop at Clarivis. We come out and we talk to our clients and say, tell me what your highest priority use case would be. What would you like for us to solve for you? And we get that information back from them. And that really kind of drives what we're doing, how we develop our entire platform. And AI is no different to that. So some of the use cases that we are internally working on is predictive analytics around, you know, deposit leakage, if you will. You brought deposits up a minute ago. So if I can look at the behaviors of customers for the past 6 months the 6 months prior to them actually leaving the bank, moving all of their money out, and I can take that and I can use AI to say, show me the other customers who were behaving that way, that's a game changer, and serve that up before the money leaves the bank, that is a very, very, you know, specific use case, but it's one that we're diving into at Clarivis. And so we are going to be very use case driven with AI. We're going to make sure that we're doing it in the right manner with the right cleaned data. Because again, if somebody just sells you an AI tool and you've done nothing to clean up your data or to consolidate your data or to link your data, to do the data joins, how the heck are you going to make any sense out of it? You're not going to be able to.
Yep.
And so that's how we're approaching it. And super excited about some of the things that we have on the drawing board. You know, using the generative AI is probably what we'll come out with first. And that's, you know, we're a visualization layer, so we have a Clarivis report builder that we've built all these pre-built dashboards. Okay, so bank buys Clarivis, and within 90 days, actually 60 days now, they can sign it. They'll have all their dashboards, their 350 plus pre-built dashboards. They don't have to do anything, just log into the system and there they are with all their data elements, right? After we go through implementation. But we also now have this report builder that allows them to build a graph, a chart, a query using, you know, very easy, because we make data simple at Clarivis, way of something that we haven't built. Well, think about if we layer generative AI on top of that and say, make me a graph of X, Y, and Z, right? Type that in rather than the banker actually having to know what goes on the X axis and what goes on the Y axis and what is the data element called and this, that, and the other. We see that as a path forward for us as far as AI is concerned. So it's coming into Clarivis. It's not going to be there tomorrow, but it's, you know, because it takes time, and we want to make sure that when we deliver it, we're delivering it accurately and correctly.
You know, you've referenced it a couple of times that organizations get concerned about any kind of data tool because they get concerned about their data, as all organizations do. Is that the primary stumbling block when you're knocking on the door of an organization, trying to show them what you have? Is that one of the first questions that they have, or one of the reasons why they say they want to stall? That they don't want to give you anything until it's all right? But the reality is you can do a whole lot of things without it being all right, correct?
No, 100% correct. And I would say in the early days, Jim, we were hearing that. Now, whether it's because I'm on podcasts with, you know, influencers like yourself, or, you know, we've just been out there talking about this and we have so many client use cases around it, we don't hear it that frequently any longer, but it is a fear. What I tell my banks, though, is that we have not one implementation, not one out of our 100 plus implementations that we've done, have we not had a dirty data problem, right? Has the CEO not looked at the platform and say, oh my gosh, that needs to be clean, that needs to be fixed? And because it's visual, it just jumps off the page at you. And so now, you know, they're able to say, okay, well, let's focus the resources and energy into making sure that that data element or what have you is corrected. Another big issue, and I'm going to get into the weeds just a little bit on this, but it's really important for your end users to know. So when I was in banking back in the 2005 to 2015 era, right, we used a lot of user-defined fields inside of our core system and other systems because the cores just didn't have the fields that we wanted to track. User-defined fields are the death of AI. They're the death of any kind of phenomenal reporting. And so what I encourage, and we encourage all of our banks to do, the cores have gotten better at opening more fields and creating more standardized fields. There could be a standardized field there today that you're not leveraging because you're still using a user-defined field. Go back and do an analysis of your user-defined fields and make sure that if there's a core field, go through the effort of using the core field because now you can report on it. It's not free form. You're going to be able to leverage that, you know, utilizing machine learning and artificial intelligence much easier than you can a user-defined field. If you're tracking something really important in a user-defined field, you need to find a standard field to track it in order to leverage it.
I think that's a key element for your company is that not only are you providing the visualization of data and how to use it and expand the democratization of data across the organization, is that you understand the rabbit holes that financial institutions get into. You understand the challenges, and also you understand, because of the number of clients you have, what are some opportunities that you didn't even think people would use your data for that they're now doing that? I mean, I think that's, everybody's looking for a friend. Everybody's looking mm-hmm. for somebody to get them over that hump. I mean, that's why composable solutions have done so well in our industry, is that organizations can't spend the time to say, how do I go from a 15-minute account opening process to a 5-minute or a 3-minute? Organizations can't develop a brand new digital lending platform that works for them. They're looking for those professionals, those specialists that can get that right. And I think those are the rabbit holes, especially when you're looking at data, that are so important, is that your organization has the ability to work from the perspective of the customer mm-hmm. as opposed to the perspective of a data company. And, you know, we just finished the Super Bowl and the winning team was that team that worked so well together to get the ball down the field without everybody running along, that everybody let the people do what they did best and then work together. Well, that's kind of what you're talking about here. You're saying, you know what, we're really good in this element. We're not as good in this. We don't say destroy your core. We say, no, let's leverage all the data that's available across many different cores and many different systems for your benefit. So with that in mind, there's not an organization out there that doesn't have problems with IT budgets or budgets in general. And they also are looking for IT talent or data talent that's probably not resident right now and is extraordinarily expensive to get. With that as the foundation, what advice do you offer for pragmatic first steps when organizations are trying to modernize their data journey?
Yeah. So as with anything that is an enterprise initiative, it has to start at the top because there's going to be silos that have to be broken down, not just from a technology perspective, but just by the way your teams interact and work together. And so, you know, moving to an enterprise data strategy is critical, but it has to be at the direction of the C-suite of from the board. So if you have that buy-in, right, and here's how if you need assistance in getting that buy-in or putting that business case together, call me because I can talk about that all day long as
You've
well.
Done it before.
I've done it before. That's exactly right. But just think about it, Jim. Yeah. Again, when I was in banking, and I would argue across many organizations today, it's the operational folks who are deciding what codes they're going to set up in their systems and what data elements they're going to actually collect. That's the wrong group, right? It needs to be coming from the business perspective. And so an enterprise strategy brings all of those constituents and stakeholders together when they're embarking upon this journey. And that's why it's so important. It can't just be about marketing. It can't just be about, you know, finance. It has to be about moving the industry, moving the bank forward as a whole. And so start there. The second one you hit on a minute ago is identify where all your data sources live, your key value data elements. Now, there's a lot of data elements that's noise that you don't need to worry about, right? But there's some key elements that drive your business, and you need to know where they live. Are they on the core? If they're not on the core, do we want to put them on the core? Can we get them out of the other systems that they're in? Be careful. They may be in somebody's desk drawer on a pencil, on a piece of paper. Yeah. Okay. They may be there. And so you need to identify where are all those data sources, where do they live, and where, what are the items that are really going to help us transform our organization and move it forward. And then the third step is, how are we going to bring those data sources together in one place? And that's really where Clarivis can kind of come in and help you. You do not need to go invest and build your own internal data lake. I would argue that that is not the right approach at all. And I would say that whether I had the system or not. And the reason for that is because with Clarivis, you're able to leverage not only our expertise, but how all of our clients are utilizing data, right? Because all of our clients have their fingerprints on our product. If you go and you build this in a silo, all you're going to have is a silo. Another silo inside of your organization that you've built, and you're going to go hire data scientists who do not understand the business value. And so that proverbial queue that we talked about a few minutes ago is still going to exist. Oh, I need you to build me a dashboard. Okay, well, what does the dashboard entail? Well, I don't know. I just wanted to have these elements on it. Okay, the data person goes and builds it. Well, no, that's not what I wanted. You know, I saw something the other day. Gosh, if I could just put my, they can't articulate what it is that they want until they see it. And when they see it, it's golden. And it's really hard to solve that problem internally. It's just really hard to do it.
So I'm ABC Credit Union in a small town in Ohio, and I have limited budget, but I also have a limited idea of what the potential is for your solution. Could I leverage your solution, let's say in a composable way, to handle just my data with regard to deposit generation, deposit flows, without touching the loan side of the business or the commercial or small business? Do you work with clients that want to start in a smaller environment than the overall organization? Is that possible to be done?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have packages inside of Clarivis. And so, you know, and it starts from somebody who's at the very beginning of their data journey and just really needs basic reporting, all the way, you know, to somebody who wants an API wrapper and get the data back so they can do their own ML techniques on it, right? So we kind of cross the gamut in our packages work that way. I would say I would never bring somebody up with just deposits. And here's why, Jim, because you're losing some great intelligence there. I want to know if I just bring up deposits, I don't know if they're a single deposit account holder or do they have loans with me also, right? That's important in seeing that whole holistic customer picture. Okay. If I'm really trying to figure out how I'm going to leverage and understand what is happening with that customer. So we don't offer anything where you just bring up deposits, but you can just bring up deposits and loans in a basic fashion. That's our kind of our starting package, if you will. And I will say we have banks on our platform as small as 80 million and as large as 8 billion today. So our price point really, you know, again, think of my background. I was a community bank CFO.
It's wildly friendly for who you're
exactly
trying to serve.
Yeah. I want this to be affordable. We are building in a way that it is affordable. And the efficiency gains that our clients are seeing are 300-400% ROI in their first year, just based upon making the data available. That doesn't even count the rev gen that they're generating as a result of being able to leverage the data.
So last question. Looking 3 years ahead, we don't talk about 5 or 10 anymore because we know we're going to be wrong. But looking, let's say, 3 years ahead, what excites you about what you're going to be able to provide to the financial services industry, and what's going to be available out there as tools that can make banking better?
So the Clarivis journey is going to include so much, right? So we have a very robust roadmap for the next 3 years. But really, where do I get excited is that AI component, where we're really able to move from the analytics we're delivering today to really more predictive analytics, to where they truly can start leveraging their data to serve their customers better ahead of, be proactive instead of reactive. To me, that's where we need to get to, and I'm super excited about the path forward on that. But the first step was bringing all the data together, right? And that's the hardest step, quite frankly, is getting it all together. Do you know how many systems are in the banking ecosystem? I mean, it's got kind of crazy. Yeah. And so, you know, getting data accessibility is huge. And data accessibility is going to be the second thing that I hope in 3 years is a non-issue. I hope in 3 years, every bank has access to their data in a way that they can meaningful leverage it, regardless of the system that they're on. Again, that's kind of a personal soapbox that I'm on, but it's so critical.
Well, it's the foundation upon which everything's built. And we're really in a situation right now in the industry where we can't wait. We say that a lot, and it's like the sky is falling. But the reality is the consumer gets predictive analytics when they tag into Hulu or exactly. into Netflix. They get predictive analytics as they get in a car and look at the roadmap. And last night I had to cross Florida from my son's place to mine, and having the tool that said, oh, there's a problem up here. You can't use this freeway because of smoke from grass burning in the Everglades. You know, if I didn't know that, I'd probably still be on the road trying to get home. And that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about predictive mm-hmm. analytics, and everything happens so fast. You know, you talk about Silicon Valley Bank, and you realize that an organization can have a run in less than an hour because everybody has simply a button they can push. How do other organizations react to that happening in a way that works well for everybody involved? Kim, this has been an exciting conversation. I realize now as we got deeper in the conversation, what you do for the banking industry is what my son does for pharmaceuticals. He is a visualization guru that really takes data from pharmacies, from healthcare companies, from medical firms, the producers of pharmaceuticals, brings these together to make it so organizations can leverage that data for a better revenue flow for pharmaceuticals, for pharmacy. So it's a very interesting field that I'm awesome. By no means, as I prove by some of my questions, not a pro at doing. But the reality is, if you don't make this data accessible in the most basic ways, if you don't make it visible, if you don't make it so that a non-data person can access it and do something that impacts the consumer, we've left a lot of money on the table. So
we sure have.
Thank you so much for being a part of this podcast. And I'm looking forward to talking to you again.
Absolutely, Jim. Thank you so much. Have a lovely day.
Thanks for listening to Banking Transformed, the winner of 3 international awards for podcast excellence. If you enjoy what we're doing, please take some time to show some love in the form of a review. Finally, be sure to catch my recent articles on the financial brand and check out the research we're doing for the Digital Banking Report. This has been a production of Evergreen Podcast. A special thank you to our senior producer, Leah Haslidge, audio engineer, Chris Fafalias, and video producer, Will Pritz. I'm your host, Jim Roos. Remember, the key to success in banking is bringing data to life, improving decision-making, operations, and the customer experience.
You've got questions, we've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.